You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. January 6th will be remembered as a dark day in American history. A violent insurrection of pro-Trump extremists stormed and occupied the U.S. Capitol for hours in an attempt to stop the confirmation of Electoral College votes. Five people died, including a Capitol police officer. It's been decades since the Capitol and government workers faced a threat like this, but it's not unprecedented. To look back on this history of Capitol threats, Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski spoke with John Savajan, a history professor at Alverno College. They start with the very first time the U.S. Capitol was attacked, during the War of 1812.
Well, obviously we're under war, no one expected the British to actually do this. In fact, the Secretary of War, John Armstrong, told Madison that'll never happen. He was wrong. The British came in pretty much undefended, so they came pretty quickly. It was really done out of spite because the United States had invaded Canada and burned its capital in York. So it was not a strategic decision. It was really done to punish the Americans. And it was quite effective. The capital was burned. We ended up with a lot of heroes saving the day, saving a lot of the records, a lot of the materials that were shepherded out of the capital before it was actually burned. And then they rebuilt again after that.
The next attempt of violence against the U.S. government in D.C. was, fast forward a bit, to the Civil War, which you say can be considered a turning point in American history. So why is that?
Well, war tends to be one of these great interruptions, right, where all of a sudden people tend to think of themselves before this happened and then afterwards, because the ramifications are so big, the ripple effects are so enormous. And of course, the Civil War is still being played out. The fact that we see people talking about it today and the far right are talking about trying to instigate a new civil war tells you that it's still part of American history, lore, and legend. So it's there. It's an extraordinarily important moment. And the attack on the Capitol in that instance was eerily similar to what happened with the Biden count, because that was an attempt to stop the counting of Lincoln's electoral votes. Very similar. So there, that is a kind of an eerie parallel. We could explore that.
One parallel that is rather a stark difference is the comparison of the military actually being prepared to fight a Virginia militia trying to stop the electoral counts of Lincoln. They locked down D.C. compared to basically walking through the front door, right? So
they were definitely ready. I think they didn't take the bluster as just a lot of smoke and mirrors. The general in charge of the military was Winfield Scott, was a kind of, his nickname was Old Fuss and Feathers. He was a rather elderly gentleman. He couldn't even get on a horse anymore, but he understood the threat and he mobilized the army to basically cordoned off the entire Capitol to prevent anybody from coming in. So that was a significant difference.
How far in advance did they know of the threat? Were the Virginians kind of exclaiming their intentions before Lincoln's vote was coming up?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's because when Lincoln was running for president, there were already talks and threats. Once Lincoln had been elected, before he even came. And remember, the inauguration was going to be in March. So there's a big buildup to that. The count was around the same time, the electoral count. But there was a lot of talk about assassinations. There was a lot of anger by Southern states. There was talk already of disunion, of separation. And then you started to hear in the newspapers and the accounts of people in Virginia and elsewhere saying that they were going to basically stop the vote.
So this is really just kind of one of the bigger sparks before the official secession of states and the Civil War as we know it.
You would think it was, but it got kind of lost over time because of what happens afterwards with Fort Sumter and then of course the war itself. So it kind of gets lost in the history. We bring it up now because it seems to be such an interesting parallel to what we just went through.
Right. And before we get to current events, there's also a few other attacks on the Capitol, but not, on as grand a scale. What I want to mention, because of the nature of targeting legislators, was an attack in 1954 by four Puerto Rican nationalists that wounded six. So what were the nationalists trying to raise issue with, or was there a specific vote happening on the floor dealing with Puerto Rican relations? What are the circumstances here?
It was all about Puerto Rican independence. It was a desire, as again, these were nationalists. They wanted to draw attention to the desire of Puerto Ricans to be free of colonial oppression. That was essentially the mantra. And that what better way to get attention to that than to get out onto the Capitol floor? And they were in the visitors gallery firing down. And before they did, they unfurled a banner calling for Puerto Rican independence. And those four individuals were captured. And then tried and sentenced to life in prison. They were eventually pardoned and all survived and went back to Puerto Rico.
Now, when it comes to bringing guns into the chamber, that's one thing. There's obviously senators who have violence among each other on the floors throughout American history. But one more maybe modern technology of a threat is bombings. So there was one bombing at the Capitol in 1973 by the Weather Underground. Who were they?
They were a Marxist-based, anti-capitalist, far-left group. They were cut their teeth in protesting the war in Vietnam, and so they had been involved in quite a bit of protests. And they decided to take the protest to another level and start wreaking havoc. They also were using crimes to gather money, so they were also involved in bank robberies to build up their support and their weapons, et cetera. And that bombing was just another way to bring misery and destruction to the capitalist system. I guess you could say it was a distraction device. Nobody was injured from it. I think the location was in the Senate chamber, but it didn't cause death. So that was a great thing.
Yeah. Back in 1915, a German-born professor from Harvard, Erich Mundher, also detonated a bomb inside the Capitol. It seems like a kind of a lone actor situation. What was this man doing? What did he want?
Well, afterwards, we kind of figured out that the man had a little bit of a mental health issue. He was caught the next day trying to kill J.P. Morgan, the great Wall Street financier, and then he committed suicide. And apparently what he was trying to do was to make a message for world peace, which seems kind of odd to be blowing up things and shooting people if you wanted to be advocating for peace. But he was very concerned about the war. The United States had not yet involved in that war. In 1915, it was a war in Europe. But of course, he was German and he was concerned about what was happening on the European continent. And he wanted to make a statement and tried essentially to keep America out of the war. So you can see that it's really hard to make logic out of what he was doing, even though he was obviously an intellectual Harvard professor.
And then one other incident that we will bring up is the death of two security guards killed by an intruder in the 1980s. Was this intruder with an agenda, so to speak, or was it another random act of violence?
It was another random act of violence. It was a lone wolf, shall we say, but there was no heavy political agenda involved in it. So it didn't have any of the gravitas or the meaning behind it, other than the fact that that was what's going to trigger the security that ramped up quite a bit after that. Because two police officers were killed, and so was the intruder. So that's the significance of that event. It begins the reevaluation of the security measures around the Capitol. And of course, we're going to end up with another dramatic reevaluation of security around Capitol Hill after this.
Yeah, exactly. On that note, you know, one of the things that was immediately brought up following the insurrection at the Capitol was how easy it was for a massive crowd of people to get in and to cause such damage. And while most of these instances we talked about in history were limited events, the biggest difference is they were not meant to stop the democratic process, besides the Virginia militia here. Why is the events of the 6th so unparalleled?
I think because it's something that was initiated by a president. It was, that's what President Trump was impeached for, was Article 3 of the 14th Amendment, which dealt with insurrection. That's what makes it different. You might have an external threat, which is what we saw in the War of 1812. You might even have an attempt by states' militias, perhaps, to, and that was the beginning of the Civil War. So we get a little bit of understanding of the ideas of secession, but to have a president sitting in office who is going to try to prevent the successful peaceful transfer of power, which is one of the hallmarks of American democracy, that is what makes this quite unique and chilling for many people.
Right, the difference of a domestic invasion.
A domestic terrorist invasion. I'm going to put that word in there.
Well, and on that word, you know, it's so important how news organizations, people are labeling this, right? What do you think is the most important language we need to use right now? Are there any additional words other than terrorism right now? And keep using for future history books to cite what happened this month.
Right. I think insurrectionist is going to be used a lot. I think you're hearing I saw the FBI referring to these as extremists, domestic extremists, which is an interesting label. You could certainly, anybody could be a domestic extremist with these ideas. So I think you're going to hear some of that, but domestic terrorists is certainly one that had been used for a long time, but it was always difficult to pigeonhole certain individuals in this way. But I think what's going to happen, we're going to find out more as we're learning more. And that's something historians tend to wait for, is more information before we make these decisions about any of this. As we learn more about how organized it was, how far it went, that's when these labels start to really stick.
Well, John, I want to thank you so much for helping us look into different periods of history where the Capitol was under threat.
It was great talking to you.
John Sabajian is a history professor at Alverno College in Milwaukee. He joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski to talk about the history of threats against the U.S. Capitol.